SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, a show where we discuss everything that has to do with, of course, the book The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, but perhaps something that people are much more excited about nowadays, the upcoming movie of The Hobbit that is about to start production. With me to talk about The Secrets of the Hobbit is a longtime Tolkien fan, also works as a data scientist in Los Angeles. He's a runner, and he is now famous for a quote in The Washington Post about the Tolkien professor, a friend of our show. I'm talking, of course, about Dave Cale. Hey, Dave, how are you doing?
Good morning.
I am so glad to have you as a celebrity on the show.
Yes.
How did you end up in The Washington Post? Tell me about it.
Well, there's this columnist in The Washington Post. His name's Daniel Devise, and he writes a column about higher education and college and stuff. And I guess he's sort of noticed what Corey Olson, who's at Washington College, has been doing in terms of the Tolkien Professor podcast and website and all that stuff. Notice that he's done really, really well on the iTunes rankings and things like that, and that he sort of has this sort of cult following. And this guy is very, very interested in new trends in higher education and how people are using the internet and new media to try and do something different.
Right.
So he was very interested to talk to Corey and also to hear about sort of Corey's, what his reception's been like amongst his colleagues, which, as I understand, has been mixed. There's been some people that have been like, oh, this is great. And then there's been other people who are like, oh, this isn't the way it's supposed to be done. So
yeah, in case you've been living under a rock, Corey Olson is the creator of the very popular podcast series, The Tolkien Professor, which is a literary analysis of the story of The Hobbit, plus the world of Tolkien in general. It's someone with an incredible knowledge, and he's a very good teacher, I have to say. He's a very engaging speaker. We interviewed him for another show that we do together with Laura and with Inge on SQPN.com, which is called The Secrets of Middle Earth, where we literally walk around in Middle Earth. That is the virtual version, as you can see in the online game The Lord of the Rings Online. And so we invited him to join us in Middle Earth and to talk a little bit about Tolkien and about everything Lord of the Rings related. It was a great discussion. We're still producing it or doing the post-production, so that show will hopefully be online as soon as we can put it out. And we'll keep you, of course, informed on this show about that as well. But a very interesting guy to check out. But we'll talk more about Tolkien, about the story, about the literary elements. This show is called The Secrets of the Hobbit because we want to go in depth when it comes to these upcoming Hobbit movies. We want to talk, of course, about the rumors, about how this movie is made, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, so secrets in that respect. But we also want to dive into the story and ask questions like, how is this story going to be told by Peter Jackson? Because, of course, the movie is not going to be a copy of the book. It's not going to be a one-on-one translation. It is a movie. It's a different genre. It's a different language. And as we have seen with the way that Peter Jackson told the story of The Lord of the Rings in his movies, you will probably see a similar translation, as it were, of the original story into the movies that we are looking forward to. And so we want to go in depth about the story itself, the backstory. How is this story going to be told, and how can we expand upon it? What is the things that we don't necessarily read in The Hobbit, in the original Hobbit book, but still history that's going on at the same time as the story of Bilbo and his little fellowship of dwarves there. And so what do we know about that, and how can that possibly be integrated into the overall story? And many, many more topics. But, well, in order to give this show at least a hint of structure, we thought it would be good to just give you an overview every time that we do a show of the latest news when it comes to the movies themselves. Dave, you've been following the recent news. What are the top stories?
Sure. So I think the one that everyone's most excited about, which was just announced a few days ago, is that they finally decided on a shoot date for The Hobbit. They've, from what I've read, they've started preparing the they rebuilt the old Shire set, and they had closed it down to visitors, and so people were starting to murmur about, oh, maybe it's time, maybe they're finally going to get shooting. And, you know, this film suffered from one delay after another.
Yeah.
So the fact that they finally decided on a date is exciting. And that date is March 21st of this year. So just a little over a month, and they're finally going to get started.
Very exciting. And it's going to take place in New Zealand, which for a long time was very much up in the air. We didn't know if it was actually going to be filmed in New Zealand, because there were all sorts of, well, what was it? It was kind of worker union stuff that was... It was very complicated, and at one time, I think that some people were, I don't know if it was Peter Jackson or the production company, but they were threatening to move to other countries, to come to Eastern Europe, which is kind of where I live. Well, I'm not living in Eastern Europe, I'm from Holland in the Netherlands, but just the idea of not filming in New Zealand, terrible, terrible idea.
Yeah. It would have been very sad, and that would have put a major crimp on the economics that the New Zealanders have been anticipating for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years.
I think so too. And of course, they can do a lot with special effects and recreate almost anything anywhere. I mean, you live in LA, so you must see LA in almost every movie, whether the actual story takes place in New York. They are able to change Los Angeles into almost any city in the world.
Yes, yeah, I frequently notice, because I live in East LA, uh-huh. And I frequently notice, like, oh, I know that neighborhood. I've driven past there.
That's not the Bronx.
Yeah, it'd be very nice if we don't see that in The Hobbit.
Hey, Brie looks just like LA.
Silver Lake. I've been to that coffee shop.
Oh my! No, so it's very cool, and I'm super excited for my New Zealand friends that they did. Finalized all the contracts and everything, and that they are going to go ahead in New Zealand. And then, of course, what would a movie called The Hobbit be without the original Shire, which is up on the Northern Island, at least the set is. And I actually visited the set when I visited New Zealand. That's almost 2 years ago now. Time flies. And it was amazing to just walk around there. And actually, I've recorded the whole tour. So hopefully, sometime in the future, I'll be able to put those recordings online. It's fascinating because you get a whole tour of where the Shire stuff was filmed at the time for The Lord of the Rings. But they were also, at the time, already preparing the set for the filming of The Hobbit. And this was back when they thought that they would go ahead with the movie in 2010 or even towards the end of 2009, I'm not sure anymore. So, but they had already planted trees, and because of course this is a version of the Shire that is even before the Shire that we know from the Lord of the Rings movies. So anyway, that's all something that I want to share in the future. So they've gone ahead with announcing the shooting. I think that they will start in Wellington, if I'm correct, and they'll move over to the Matamata set later on in the year. Of course, the seasons are very different from, well, the place where I live. It's almost the opposite right now. It's we're in the middle of winter here, and it's springtime, almost summer, I think, over there. And I guess that is very important as well for if you film a story like that, and well, you have to take into account the overall climate over in New Zealand. What do we know about the casting? Who's going to play Bilbo? It's not going to be the actor that we saw in The Lord of the Rings, I assume.
No, certainly not. It's not going to be Ian Holm. It's going to be a new guy. So yeah, let's do a rundown of the casting. That's a good idea, and we can get into some of the more recent castings in a second. So Bilbo is going to be played by a gentleman named Martin Freeman,
mm-hmm.
Who is a fairly sort of well-known British actor, I believe. I actually personally haven't seen him in a ton of things. What I have seen him in is he played Dr. John Watson in the BBC's 2010 remake of Sherlock Holmes, their little sort of mini TV miniseries called Sherlock. But he was also in the English version of The Office, which I'm ashamed to admit I haven't seen. I've only watched the U.S. one. And he played Arthur Dent in the film adaptation of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Right.
So from what I've seen him in, he's excellent. I was actually thrilled when I saw this because have you watched the BBC Sherlock, Father?
No, I haven't. I only knew this actor from Hot Fuzz, which is a very funny police parody. It's a very funny movie. I've not seen him in any other movie, but now I'm going to go back.
Well, if you get a chance, I don't know if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan, but if you are, or if you like that sort of genre, the mm-hmm. mystery stories, you would enjoy it. He's excellent in it. He's very good. I personally, I don't know about you, but when I saw he was cast as Bilbo, I was actually thrilled. I think he's going to be great.
I think so too. When I saw his picture, I was like, yeah, that is totally a hobbit. That is, how can they find these characters that just look like real life hobbits? I mean, he totally fits the mental image that I had of Bilbo.
So I wonder how he would feel about that.
Well, I don't know.
It's great because I got the part, but man, I don't know if I want people thinking I look like a hobbit.
Well, you know, you've got some faces that don't match the Hobbit, the overall Hobbit genre. I don't know. Yes.
Anyone who could play an elf probably shouldn't be playing a Hobbit.
Yeah. But no, very, very cool. I wonder, though, what they will do with the makeup and wigs and everything, because, of course, in the original Lord of the Rings trilogy, Bilbo, the younger Bilbo that we see in just one scene, I think, where he picks up the ring. Is that where he finds the ring?
Mm-hmm.
He's got this big wig and just long curly hair. It looks very wacky, almost a bit over the top. It's very much the Frodo look, but
yes,
more blonder.
Sort of 70s long hair hippie look.
Yeah. So what do you reckon? Do you think that Peter Jackson will go back to the Lord of the Rings and do the George Lucas thing where he will just take out the original actor and put in new scenes with Martin Freeman and then resell it to us for twice the price?
if he's smart, he will, and he'll do a digitally remastered version, and mm-hmm. and then he'll put it through the one of those
3D.
Magic processors.
We need 3D.
That makes it 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah, sell it to us multiple times.
Well, they kind of did that. This is a bit off topic, but you know, this show is going to go off topic quite a bit because we've got this freeform style. But a lot of fans were upset with the Blu-ray edition of the Lord of the Rings trilogy because instead of using all that storage space that Blu-ray offers and giving us the extended editions of the movies and to do some seamless branching, you know, with the movie, they just put the movie, the original theatrical releases on there. And of course, everybody wanted to have the Blu-ray version. And now there's going to be another, you know, super edition of the Lord of the Rings trilogy on Blu-ray. And of course, it's going to be more expensive and everybody's going to repurchase it again. And that, to me, is very George Lucas-like. I'm not sure if I like that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that either. Jeez. Yeah, that's kind of upsetting, you know.
But what do we do? We're real fans, so we
they kind of did that with Harry Potter too. They released the original version and extended, and then Ultimate, yeah. And then like 8 other ones, and it's kind of tiresome. I mean, it's going a little bit far with the sort of rampant consumerism.
We can do
of course
this.
If we didn't buy it, they wouldn't do it. But yeah. Still,
we could do the same with this podcast and just yeah, re-release exactly. It next year as a special edition of The Secrets of the Hobbit. Now with even more hosts.
Yeah, we'll dub some extra people over.
We'll add a digital Hobbit version of you and me. And I don't know. Okay, let's go back to the cast. So Martin Freeman is playing Bilbo. I think it's going to be awesome. Ian McKellen is back.
Yes. And I think people would have gone ballistic.
Oh,
if he
yeah.
Had come back.
And, you know, he himself... Actually, he wrote on his blog or on his website that he wasn't sure at all that he should reprise the role. There's this shocking article where he's like, well, the movie's been delayed time and again. And I was like, well, who really cares if I'm going to play this role or take up this role again after all? And then he compares it to the I'm blanking out here. What's the name of the wizard in Harry Potter?
Dumbledore.
How could I forget? He's like, well, that Dumbledore has been played by two actors. Well, the first one died. It's a little different thing.
Yeah,
but he was like, so who cares that someone else plays this role? So he said, you know, who cares if I play Gandalf or some other actor? And then he was like, well, and I do think about what to do with the time left. He's only 71, and he's already like, oh, I don't know how many years I still have. I was wondering, is this the whole story, or could this just be part of the negotiations? Like, I'm not sure if I want to play this role, but of course, a little bit of extra reimbursement might help. I don't know.
I think he's underselling the controversy over the multiple Dumbledores too. I mean,
oh, yeah.
There's a large portion of the Harry Potter fandom that just absolutely reviles Michael Gambon. So
I still long for the true Dumbledore. I think yes. There's been a magical trick played on us, and it's like with the Beatles, you know. It's not the real Dumbledore. It's just they make us believe. But if you take the soundtrack and you play it backwards on your computer, you clearly hear that "I am not Dumbledore" is somewhere whispered. Anyway, so I'm super excited that he's gonna play Gandalf again. Who else is back?
And on the whole, I really think his portrayal of Gandalf is pretty good and satisfying, and I am excited as well.
Yeah, it's not just his physical appearance; it's his voice.
Yeah,
he's got, you know, when you hear his voice, he is Gandalf. I don't know. I can't imagine another voice, and that was the most jarring thing in the Harry Potter replacement. The mm-hmm. style of the character changed. I mean, the character doesn't look the same, but he was the new actor was constantly yelling, whereas the
yes.
the former Dumbledore was very soft spoken, very gentle, and so there was a totally different take on the character. And I would have hated to see that happen to Gandalf.
Yeah, and I think Ian McKellen does a great job, sort of capturing the old man grumpiness of Gandalf and sometimes his sort of sarcasm, but also his kindliness and his compassion and his caring for his friends, and his chemistry with the other cast members was great. So
yes,
yeah, I think we can agree. We're excited.
Absolutely. And so, but he's not the only original actor from the original Lord of the Rings series that is back. There was this shocking news that Frodo will be back. What do we think about that?
My first response was, oh God, here we go. Then, you know, it's one thing to put Galadriel and some of those other people in.
Well,
there.
And Gollum, of course. I mean, that's yes. no problem. That's a digital character anyway.
Yeah.
But Frodo.
I was like, Frodo, I mean, oh, now they're bending time. But I see what they're doing now. They're going to start it off with they're going to start off with the very beginning of the movie is going to be Frodo reading from the Red Book of Westmarch, you know, which is Bilbo's memoirs, i.e. The Hobbit. It's going to start off with Frodo reading from that to a bunch of little kids.
Is that the book that Bilbo is completing or writing at the end of the trilogy, where we see him in his house or, you know, at Bag End?
Yep. Yeah, it's basically it's Bilbo's sort of you know, the both The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings are the frame story, if you will, which is a term from literature that I've recently learned. The frame story is these are memoirs written by the Hobbit. So everything in The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings is told from the point of view of the Hobbits, which is an interesting literary device, because you can go back and wonder sort of, you know, what do they get right? What do they get wrong? Is the, you know, they're a slant to this or leaving things out. But so The Hobbit starts off as sort of Bilbo's memoirs. And then Frodo takes over after Bilbo leaves the Shire. Frodo starts sort of editing them. And then after the events of The Lord of the Rings, Frodo picks it up again, and he starts writing their story. And then after Frodo leaves Middle-earth, Sam picks it up, and he sort of finishes it. And then Merry and Pippin also add a whole bunch of stuff to the appendices and things like that.
Really?
So it sort of was this collaborative project between the various hobbits who went off and had these strange adventures. And so anyway, I think what it looks like, and the point of these were to make sure that these stories persisted in history of the Hobbit. So not only did they write this book, but they also went and shared it with other people, at least once it was finished. Bilbo was secretive with it. But I think once it was finished, Sam in particular, as sort of in his role as sort of a patriarch of Hobbiton, you know, as mayor, I think he read it to not only his children but other Hobbit children to sort of keep it alive, keep the memory alive, and maybe teach Hobbits about the wider world and about values such as heroism and friendship and those kinds of things. So I think that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to have Frodo read it.
So the story of the Hobbit would be almost a flashback within the overall frame of the Shire or wherever Frodo is telling this story or writing it. That actually would make sense to me. And I read an interview with Elijah Wood where he said, you know, when they approached me, I never saw this coming. I thought I was done with this character. I thought there's just no way in the world that we can ever go back. And then he read the proposal. I don't know if he's already seen the script, but at least the way they pitched it to him was, no, we're going to do this while respecting the story. So we're not going to force you in, which, you know, it's not going to be like a cameo, like we see Bilbo walking around there, and then all of a sudden this Frodo who jumps out of the house like a younger version of Frodo is like, hey, Bilbo, I'm in a movie as well. I actually, and that would have been very difficult, because I was my initial idea was, okay, so they are probably gonna talk about where the other characters were during the events of The Hobbit, because of course the story itself, the history of Middle-earth, is much larger than the story that that Tolkien focuses on in The Hobbit. Actually, he hadn't even invented this whole wider context of the story of The Hobbit. But I could see that they would broaden the story like that, and then perhaps Frodo could be, I don't know, this kid. But then the actor, Elijah Wood, is of course, he's 10 years older than when he finished The Lord of the Rings. So like, this is going to be,
right.
They're going to do one of these things that we saw in X-Men, you know, where they took Ian McKellen and digitally altered him to look 20 years younger, but he looked like a plastic robot from, I don't know, some freak movie.
Of course, in this particular case, it wouldn't have worked too well, because they would have had to... digitally alter Frodo into nothing, because the Hobbit actually takes place about 50 years before the Lord of the Rings.
Well, yeah, I'm just a casual Tolkien reader, so I didn't know all those details. I figured, yeah, well, perhaps hobbits are just very old, you know, they grow slowly. So I figured,
yeah, and there's nothing stopping the filmmakers from messing around with time a little bit and saying, oh no, Frodo was actually a little kid. So I guess, you know, technically, of course, the hardcore Tolkien fans would have gone nuts, and I'm going to guess that that's the reason they didn't do that.
Do we know how old Frodo is when the Lord of the Rings story starts? Is there some definitive reference?
I think he's in his, if I recall correctly, he's in about his 50s, because when the book first starts, well, that's when he goes on his adventure. When the book first starts, he's just turning 33. At the same time that Bilbo is turning 111.
Right. Okay.
71.
Yeah.
So, and we know that The Hobbit takes place in Bilbo's 50s. So that would mean that would seem to indicate that Frodo wasn't even born at the time that those events actually took place.
Right.
So,
and he couldn't play his dad either.
No. Yes.
It
looks like, going down the casting list, it looks like somebody is going to play Drogo somewhere.
Remind me again who that is.
Oh, sorry. Baggins is Frodo Baggins' father, and so supposedly Drogo has been cast. So I don't know, maybe he's going to make a cameo or something. But I think the little frame story is interesting. You know, I actually personally, as sort of a purist, I would actually prefer if they had Sam be the guy who's reading to, because that seems like something more Sam would do than Frodo. Frodo kind of, after they return from their adventure, he's kind of sort of becomes a shut-in, because he's just never quite gets over the various sufferings that he endured and his injuries and stuff. And see, it would seem to me, I could see it more, I would prefer to see Sean Astin there as Sam reading to his own children. But you know,
well, and you know, now that you mention that, and again, this is a question. I represent the listeners that don't know much about The Hobbit, so I'm really ignorant. Not just playing it, but didn't we see Frodo leaving, you know, in the Grey Havens at the end of the story of The Lord of the Rings? He was going to, you know, the Elven Heaven or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's true. We did see him leave. There's a good maybe decade, I think. And you know, you have no idea. You don't get any sense of the time in the movie, but in the book, I think there's maybe a good decade or so where Frodo actually sticks around in the Shire and tries to live a normal life.
Yeah.
It's not until the other characters, Galadriel, Elrond, Gandalf, Bilbo, and those guys are leaving Middle-earth that Frodo decides to leave too, decides that he's not going to be able to live a normal life. So, you know, in theory, during that intervening time between when they return to the Shire and when he leaves, Frodo could be sitting around reading this book to Hobbit children. But I'm a notorious complainer about them making changes.
Sure.
Ask anyone who knows me about
that's why we have you on the show. We need that. I'm the little Peter Jackson fanboy, and you're like, well, wait a second there.
Yes. I'm okay with this. I think I would, as I said, I'd prefer Sam, just sort of, I don't know.
Sure.
Because I love Sam.
But Sam is not cast? He's not going to come back in the movie? Or
I haven't seen him mentioned.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. I love Sean Astin, the fanboy in me would love to be able to just get a glimpse of some of the other hobbits, Merry and Pippin. And as I understand it, the guy who played Pippin is the first Lord of the Rings actor to have gone bankrupt. So maybe they should toss him a bone and give him a role in the movie.
Oh, well, who knows? I think that any, you know, rekindling of the Tolkien fandom around these upcoming movies is going to be beneficial to anyone who was involved in the movies in any form, because of course they're going to be these fan conventions and they can,
yes,
you know, do their memoir, write their memoirs and It's good for everyone.
Making his rounds on at the conventions, like all the Star Trek actors.
Yeah, exactly. Forever and ever.
Yes, I played that little that robot in episode 2. That was in the corner, and you want to have my autograph? It's $40.
That's usually how it is on those Star Wars conventions. You got all these totally unknown people who played, you know, really secondary or even tertiary characters that no one knows except for the diehard fans, and they want to sell their autographs.
Right.
Oh well. Yes. But it's a question, and perhaps we can explore this in another episode where we want to, you know, where when we speculate about the way this story is going to be told, if Peter Jackson is going to be is going to respect what he did himself at the end of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, showing how Frodo goes, you know, into the West and then sails away, then he might actually pick it up even in that faraway, you know, kind of all new reality that Frodo is part of. Is it the Undying Lands, or what exactly, where did Frodo go at the end of the story? I mean, the Grey Havens, where he departs, right? The Grey Havens.
Yes, the Grey Havens, sort of the jump off point from Middle Earth, mm-hmm. to travel back across the Western Sea. And what's across the Western Sea is Valinor, or Aman, the Blessed Land, which in the film they interpreted as sort of like the sort of a Roman Elysian field style sort of afterlife or mm-hmm. heaven or something like that. But it's actually still a part of Earth, still a part of Arda.
Right.
And it basically it's where it's where most of the elves live, and it is where the Valar and some of the Maiar, and, you know, who are sort of these almost transcendental spiritual beings. They're not God, and they're often compared to angels or archangels, which is not a bad analogy, but they're mm-hmm. they're not strictly they're in form they sort of come off as a cross between angels and classic sort of Greek gods, but it's basically where all these immortal beings live, and it's because all those immortal beings live there, it gives that land, that continent, I guess you might say, it lends to it just sort of a special power, and they refer to it as the Undying Lands. And it, like I said in the film, they interpret it as sort of as heaven. But
yeah, you could probably say that it's not a metaphor of heaven, like a one-on-one kind of story translation mm-hmm. of the concept of heaven, but more an analogy, perhaps something that kind of hints at that there are aspects that resemble, you know, the afterlife. Life, and especially the eternal life aspect of the elves there.
From my understanding, I will say that in terms of if they wanted to pick up Frodo's story there, mm-hmm. I think it would be relatively short, because one of the things that pops up time and again through the Silmarillion, there's actually, you know, there's a story called the Akala Beth, which concerns Numenor, which gets mentioned several times in Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. where the Numenoreans decide that they are going to sail their ships over to Aman, to Valinor, and they've been convinced by Sauron that if they can get over there, they'll become immortal too. And they end up getting punished for it because they're not supposed to do that. But part of the reason they're not supposed to do that is they've been told, look, it doesn't work that way, guys. You won't be immortal when you arrive here. In fact, actually, it'll be bad for you. You will actually find that you will die quickly, because it's sort of, to steal from my buddy Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, it's too much bliss. The mortal beings are actually not designed to live over there in the Undying Lands with all that sort of power and it's sort of too much immortal life. So in fact, a lot of the Tolkien scholars I've read sort of speculate, when they do speculate about what's going to happen to Bilbo and Frodo when they get over there, it's Well, they'll probably die pretty quickly.
Great.
So if they ever did that storyline, that might be a short one.
Interesting.
What I'd be really curious about is if they were ever going to do that story, if they ever were going to do, let's do a sequel, let's do the adventures of characters over in Valinor. I'd love to see the Legolas and Gimli adventures.
Yeah, because Legolas doesn't join, getting into
scrapes over in Valinor.
But Legolas doesn't join Frodo, on his journey to the Grey Havens, does he? I've just lost a connection with Dave. I already figured there's something degrading here, so I'm gonna recontact LA and see if I can get him back. That sometimes happens if you use Skype. After a while, you know, the connection gets a little bit unreliable. Of course, we have an ocean between us. I'm here in the Netherlands, working as a Catholic priest, and I'm a long time podcaster. So I've been doing shows about movies, about books for a long, long time. And now Skype says that I cannot make the connection. There's an unknown error. This could be some Saruman magic, dark magic here, preventing me from recontacting Dave Cale. And so I've already done a show about The Lord of the Rings years ago, and I've recently restarted that adventure with Dave and with Laura and Inge from the Netherlands as well. And you can find that show over at sqpn.com. Or you can just go to iTunes and look for The Secrets of Middle Earth. And as I said, we're preparing a second part of that series, a second season, where we interview Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, as well as some other very well-known Tolkien experts. Dave, are you back?
I'm back.
Excellent. There was.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know. There's a little technical problem here, but you were Skyping out. Now, the question that I asked you is: do we know what happens to Legolas? He doesn't join Frodo in his journey to the, you know, from the Grey Havens, does he?
No, they. Far as I know, they stick around for a long time. One of the fun little things that you get from the book that they don't have time to get into the films, is during the sort of post, destruction of the ring, post big battle celebrations in Gondor, Legolas and Gimli, out of their friendship for Aragorn, both promise, like, all right, we're going to bring some of our own people over here and, help you fix the place up. And so, Gimli ends up bringing a contingent of dwarves from the north down to Gondor and helping sort of rebuild Minas Tirith and the various sort of, you know, Gondorian cities that have suffered during the war. And Legolas ends up bringing elves down from, you know, Greenwood, a.k.a. Mirkwood, his people, and they help sort of plant gardens and heal the land. And I think they end up settling in Ithilien. So I think Gimli and Legolas sort of, they continue their friendship. They keep their promises. Legolas visits the caves behind Helm's Deep with Gimli, and Gimli visits Fangorn Forest with Legolas, despite his terror of the Ents and Huorns there. And then they both go down to Gondor and help their friend Aragorn for a while. And I think they're sort of amongst the last people to go to Middle Earth, but they go, I think, a long time after Frodo goes. And so that's one of the, you know, that
yeah, they go to the, you mean the, what's the name again of that? They go overseas.
To Valinor.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
And you know, their friendship's one of the most interesting stories. And they mentioned this is one of the last things mentioned in the appendix to The Return of the King, where they mention that there's, you know, that that we've heard that Gimli actually went with Legolas back across the sea. They mentioned that because time and again throughout the Lord of the Rings, they refer to the fact that like Galadriel gives Legolas a warning, beware the sea. And mm-hmm. Legolas starts to sort of, as the story goes on, he feels the call of the sea the way a lot of elves do. And he realizes she was right, that he started, even though his people never went across the sea like some of the high elves did. He nevertheless starts to feel the longing to go to the sea and to go to Valinor. So they say at the end of the Return of the King, toward the end of the appendices, Legolas finally sort of, responded to the call of his heart and went across the sea. But it's also said that his buddy Gimli the Dwarf went with him.
Wow.
And they said, if that's true, that is about the weirdest thing we've ever heard of, that a dwarf would be allowed to go.
Yeah, in Valinor. Unbelievable. Yes.
They're saying, well, maybe Galadriel had something to do with it, because she's a pretty high up over there. So, yeah.
And as we know, there was a little bit of an infatuation between Galadriel and and the little dwarf there. At least in the movies. I don't know if it was in the books. I don't remember, but I thought
In the books, too, he asked for the strands of her hair and is just fascinated by her. So, but he's also very respectful and very flattering. And so I think she sort of wins him the grace to go across the sea to Valinor. Who knows what it was like for him when he got there? Or maybe he was discriminated against by the elves.
Who knows? But do we know actually if we're going to see Legolas and some of the other characters?
So that's a good question.
Is that still a rumor?
Yeah, there's rumors that they're going around. Of course, his people are in it.
Yeah.
And his father, Thranduil, is the so-called Elven King who gets who shows up in the – I can't recall if they ever actually use his name. I don't think they do. They just refer to him as the Elven King in The Hobbit. And the Elven King here is, of course, the king of the elves of Mirkwood, which is Legolas's father. And so, and later in the Hobbit story, I hope I'm not giving away spoilers here. Later in the book, there's actually a huge battle, and the elves of Mirkwood come to that battle, including the Elven King. So, on the one hand, Legolas never really shows up in the book. On the other hand, his father and a bunch of his people go off to a battle. So it's hard to imagine that he wouldn't have also been there. So I think there's a good chance we'll see him. And he won't play a significant role in the main story, but he'll at least have some cameos, and I'm sure he'll get to do some firing arrows and shield surfing and crowd surfing in a, because I imagine for that second, since they're doing The Hobbit in two pieces, I imagine in the second film they're gonna they're gonna make that battle scene really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I venture to guess he'll be in that.
Yeah, according to what I've the last thing that I read about it was, I think, 2 weeks ago or something, and it was that yes, he would be. He was returning. Like, we've got Ian McKellen, we've got Andy Serkis as Gollum, Elijah Wood as Frodo, Christopher Lee as Saruman, and Orlando Bloom as Legolas. But I've not seen any interview with Orlando Bloom about it yet. So, well, we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and I don't think it won't be too artificial. I think it'll be more natural than some of the other characters.
Well, yeah, but of course, because elves are much older. They they don't age that much, so he probably looked kind of the same.
Pretty much the same, yeah. That's true, and like I said, even though he's not highlighted in the book, would be very hard to imagine that he wasn't around participating in the various events, because his father features prominently in the book. So.
Mm-hmm.
More than likely he'll be there.
Yeah, also returning is Cate Blanchett as Galadriel. Same thing, probably looking exactly the same. We'll talk about her role and the character of Galadriel later on in one of her future episodes. We've got, of course, Andy Serkis, who's going to play Gollum. The last question that I have about casting is, do they have all the dwarves?
I think they have nearly all of them. I'm looking down at a list on the OneRing.net, and I'm counting. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So I think they have nearly all, 12, of course, because also Thorin, he wasn't on that list. So yes, they have all the dwarves, because nice. Bilbo is lucky number 13. That's why that's how Gandalf convinces them to take him along.
Yeah. Now that's cool. And any well-known actors, or are they all still to be discovered in terms of actors?
Some of them are people, names that I recognize, maybe, but I think a lot of them are actually sort of, they're not, it probably would be doing them injustice to say that they're unknowns. They're all people who've been working.
Of course,
but,
yeah.
No, I don't think anyone particularly famous.
Mm-hmm. Well, they will be after these movies come out.
Yes, that's right. That. This will open up whole new realms of work to them.
I just hope for them that the makeup department has found a solution to the beard problem. Remember that from the first from the trilogy?
Oh,
there was this glue that was causing this rash, and this was the most horrific experience ever, I think.
Yes, I remember that from the special features. Yes, yeah. I hope they've solved that, because that will be, because these guys are going to be they're going to be having a lot of beard wearing. What's interesting is when you look at the people cast to play the dwarves, they're not all, it's a lot of them are people that you would look and you'd think, well, that guy doesn't look much like a dwarf, or he mm-hmm. seems like he'd be more appropriate to play an elf or something. Especially the guy playing Thorin Oakenshield, Richard Armitage, is he's relatively well known, at least in England. He was in that British spy thriller television show, Spooks. And I think he was also in the Robin Hood series that they did over there. And so he's actually fairly well known. And you look at him, he's a sort of a pretty good looking sort of younger guy. And so it'll be interesting to see how they go about turning him into a dwarf.
Yeah. Usually with dwarves, you think, you know, overweight actors, kind of puffy and heavy and small. But I guess that with a beard and, you know, some special effects, they can do a lot. And
maybe
perhaps,
we're not giving dwarves enough credit.
Well, yeah, actually, you know, some dwarves might actually be good looking. Who knows? we don't know everything about dwarves.
The dwarves, especially in The Hobbit, since we get to see a whole bunch of them, they're actually fairly, they're, at least the way they're described is fairly diverse. I mean, they all have beards. They're all fairly short. They all wear kind of the same clothes, but it's not like Bilbo can't tell them apart. They're not like clones of each other.
No. Actually, I just found an article on Entertainment Weekly where Jackson talks about his choice for this actor. What's his name again? Who plays Thorin?
Richard Armitage.
Yeah, Richard. He says the choice is actually right in line with the casting of Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn and Orlando Bloom as Legolas in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And then, quote, Thorin Oakenshield is a tough, heroic character, and he certainly should give Leggy and Aragorn a run for their money in the... You just hear the New Zealand accent. He should give Leggy and Aragorn a run for their money in the Hearthrob Stakes, despite being 4 feet tall, says Jackson, who also announced 7 lesser-known English, Irish, and Kiwi actors in the roles of other dwarves. In Middle-earth, dwarves are a noble race and have a culture and physical appearance which sets them apart from humans. It is fun to develop these different cultures for the movie, and we're doing much more with dwarves this time around than we did with Gimli in Lord of the Rings. Our company of 13 dwarves in The Hobbit lets us explore many different personalities, and costume and makeup designs will support the type of character each actor plays. Richard is a powerful actor with a wide range, and we're very excited to be handing Thorin over to him. In this partnership, we need Richard to give us his depth, range, and emotion as an actor, and we will make him look like a dwarf. That sounds good. So they clearly have a very... it's not going to be just the seven dwarves that you see in a lot of depictions of Snow White, where they all look the same, they wear the same, they act the same. I don't know.
Yeah, and these guys are pretty... you see And actually, I want to do a quick aside because I know someone's going to hammer me for this. I said that there were 12 dwarves and Bilbo was lucky 13. Actually, there's 13 dwarves. And the reason that they want Bilbo is that they have 14 so that they don't have 13, which is an unlucky number. So,
right.
So they may be one dwarf that hasn't been cast yet. I'm looking at the cast list because I only saw 12, but mm-hmm. I could be miscounting. But anyway, there were 13 dwarves and Bilbo was the 14th. Okay, everybody who's listening. Before you start writing in,
send all your hate mail to.
Yes. Although we'd love to get your hate mail.
No, we'd love to get your feedback. And that's what I want to use to wrap up the show. I want to refer people to a brand new page that we've created on Facebook, which is called Secrets of the Hobbit. So just type that into your search window and you will see our page. So again, just look for Secrets of the Hobbit. And while you're at it, also take a look at the Secrets of Middle Earth, which is our other Facebook page where we talk with our listeners about our, the other show that we produce, which is called The Secrets of Middle Earth. The one where we wander around in Middle Earth, and so the Facebook page is where we invite you to interact with us. If you've got questions, if you've got rumors, things that we forgot to mention, information. If you play one of those dwarves, and you want to give us some inside information, we'd love to hear from you. We know that almost everyone in New Zealand either has a role in the production of these movies or knows someone who is involved in these movies. So we would love to get some Kiwi feedback. And if we don't get it, we'll just go and find some people over there to appear on our show, because I think it could be a lot of fun to have some Kiwis joining us on Secrets of the Hobbit. Because, of course, what would the Hobbit be without New Zealand? Dave, what else do you do? Where can people find you on the web?
Obviously, you can find me at Secrets of Middle Earth podcast mm-hmm. page, and one of these days we're going to get our act together and get a blog going over there, and we hope to make that and do the same thing with The Hobbit, and so we hope to see a mixture of sort of pop culture, news about the films and things like that, but also some thoughtful posts and articles by our Middle Earth panelists about interesting nice. Things, analysis, that kind of stuff.
Are you on Twitter?
You can look me up on Facebook, if you really want to.
Yeah.
And I do have Twitter accounts, which I'm not particularly regular posting on, but maybe one of these days when I start posting, I'll share them with you.
Okay, excellent. You can find me also on the Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Father Roderick on Facebook, fr.roderick, and on Twitter I'm just at Father Roderick, and that's about it. Final element of this show, the tip of the week. Dave, do you have a tip for our listeners?
Yeah, something I actually that is picked one out related? That okay. I think plays perfectly into some of our discussions. Go on Google and search for this exact phrase. Search for, is Peter Jackson screwing up The Hobbit? And what you'll find is an article over at E! Online by a lady who's named Leslie Gornstein. I can't tell you the name of the column. It's Ask the Answer, bad word. But anyway, what she did there is she addressed a question from a reader who says, hey, they're casting all these people, Cate Blanchett, Elijah Wood, Orlando Bloom, whose characters aren't in the book. What's going on here? And so the lady who wrote the article actually went and talked to Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, and said, what's going on here? And, Corey Olson's of course is a Tolkien fanatic like me, but he gives a very sort of nice, balanced look at the question, and actually gives a defense of Peter Jackson, saying he's not just making stuff up here, that even though these characters don't directly appear in the book, that the Hobbit is really just a select set of events going on in the wider world, and that there's a lot of very interesting things moving that involves some of the characters who from The Lord of the Rings that are being brought back into this movie, and that in many ways the events of The Hobbit are, and in the wider world are sort of the first, you might say, the first salvo fired in the War of the Ring. And so for those Tolkien fans that are kind of worried about, like, oh, God, Peter Jackson, what's he doing now? Go read this article and you'll feel a lot better. And for those of you who don't particularly care, you know, about whether Peter Jackson changes things or not, you'll get some interesting background information about the book and the movie. So.
Very cool. My tip of the week would be to check out on YouTube Hobbit in Five, or I think it's also called High Five, but it's Hobbit in Five. Just look that up in YouTube. It's a great little video series, and it's related to the very well-known website. And of course, I know that every listener already knows about this, the OneRing.net, where you find everything about not just The Lord of the Rings, but also about the upcoming Hobbit movies. But there's this little recap, 5-minute recap, video recap of the latest news, very much focused on, you know, the casting and the production process of the movies. So that will give you your weekly fix of Hobbit-related news. And then, of course, we hope that you keep listening to this episode as well, that you tell your friends, families, and fellow Hobbits about this show. And if you can, leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know on the Facebook page, Secrets of the Hobbit, how we can improve this and what else you would like us to do on this show. Thanks for listening. Dave, thanks for joining me today. And, well, I think we need to end with a nice Middle Earth type greeting. You're the expert, Dave. Do you have like a nice sign off in Elvish?
Oh, man. darn it. I don't have, you caught me unawares. I don't have a good one for this week, but I will look one up for, I'll come up with a good one.
Excellent. And if you have a good sign off line, let us know as well on our Facebook page. Thanks in advance. See you next time here on The Secrets of the Hobbit. And perhaps we'll see you online sometime soon. Bye now.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.